What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism. Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war.
Libertarianism.
On drugs.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to What Would Save the World. That intro you heard, the music, is by William Malsom, and he is an Austin-based musician, and you can check him out on soundcloud.com/William Malsom. So welcome to our episode today. And our episode today, our question is, are far-left ideologies such as anarchism and Marxism Eurocentric ideas? Also, alternatively, you could say, are they colonialist ideas? So we're definitely in an era of at least desire for change. I'm not sure if people are like really ready to change, but that's probably more my ego talking. But a lot of people are looking for like alternatives to capitalism, to our system, as it's been queer for a while. It has been queer for a while. Wake the fuck up, everybody. But it's been clear for a while that this shit is just not working. It's not working. And people want an alternative, and people, you know, we hear people have this like understanding in their head that there's only capitalism and communism, and oh my god, yay!
Is it all good with the sound?
It's all good with the sound, Tom.
Okay.
What's going on with what are you worried about with the sound?
I just saw you posted something at all. Oh,
it's all good. It's all good. Oh no. Oh, it's all good.
Okay.
I was freaking out about something. Everybody, this is Tom Tenney. You'll hear him at 4 p.m. next doing Brooklyn Bandstand. But back to the politics.
All right.
Thank
as
you.
As long as it's all good.
So anyway, we're looking for an alternative to our system, and I want to tell. So I want to like talk about how, you know, like a couple years ago there was Occupy, and Occupy, you know, is not really what was going on, but it was like the beginning of this idea of like group, like people don't want to have a top down organization anymore. So there's this quote from Wa'il Ghonim, and he's one of the people who started the Arab Spring. And it's like this video where he's just had to watch like the like clips of the people of like boys who died in the Arab Spring. But what he says, that's like, he says, I want to tell every mother and father that lost a son, I'm sorry, but it's not our fault. I swear to God, it's not our fault. It is the fault of everyone who held on to power and clung to it. And like, even though that was like a while, it was a couple years ago now, I feel like it's super relevant to what's been going on in America and in the world overall, or at least the people from my generation, the people who are not doing like parade-based activism, as I like to call it, you know, like permitted activism with very little demand or alternative solution presented. So a lot of people are looking for alternatives, are looking to concepts like Marxism and anarchism. I've been personally calling myself an anarcho-communist for years, so this has been exciting to me. But I recently was sent this article that was titled Revolution and American Indians, Marxism is as Alien to My Culture as Capitalism by Russell Means. And you can find that on endofcapitalism.com, or you can find it also on the What Would Save the World Facebook page or on the Radio Free Brooklyn page. And I'm here with my friends Christian and Abby, who are awesome anti-colonial activists. Come to this mic, Abby. And Abby just walked in because Abby's awesome and got here like perfect timing, actually. Like I literally did my whole beginning spiel, and here's Abby. All right, so, yeah, you can just put, there's no headphones for you there, what the fuck? Man, let's pass these headphones. Yeah, these headphones work. Christian, did you put on the wrong headphones? Oh my god, we're all so crazy. We're looking for alternatives, and we're using the alternative headphones. Anyway, so, yes, yeah, so I was just talking about how it feels like, how you doing? You just got off the train, how you doing?
Hot, it's super hot outside.
It's super hot outside.
It's good.
Okay, let me fix this microphone. Yeah. Well, welcome to Radio Free Brooklyn, everybody. You're listening to What Would Save the World. And today's episode, as I said before, is are far-left ideologies such as anarchism and Marxism Eurocentric ideas? And I'm here with Abby and Christian, who are anti-colonial activists. And what I want to know from you guys is, like, for a lot of people, like, anti-colonialism is, like, a whole other thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't have really a clear understanding of what that exactly means. Like, anti-colonialism, like, what is anti-colonialism?
Well, anti-colonialism, I would say, is digging out the root of the problem. Because, like, if you're an anti-capitalist or anti-state activist, the root of the problem, especially in this country and other places, would be colonialism. You know, these ideas of capital, private property, were spread through violence and conquest of native societies. So if you want to abolish such things, you can't abolish them while still holding on to what caused it in the first place. So it's interconnected with anti-capitalism and anti-statism, in my opinion.
What do you think, Abby?
I agree. I mean, I feel like a lot of times we forget that we're standing on a country that was built with black and brown bodies. And a lot of time we don't really recognize how this happened to be. And how, like, you know, native, I guess, ideologies or, you know, ways of living and African ways of living have really put this country together.
Mm-hmm. Because it seems like, or it definitely, it's been, like, built on a lot of European ideas, or at least the, you know, the stealing of this land.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious, like, when you first hear, like, Marxism and anarchism, like, do you think that those are Eurocentric ideas?
Well, I think that they can be, depending on how they're practiced or put together. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are. The platform is not necessarily colonialist, but some people do interpret it that way and practice it that way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so this article by Russell Means, that he said, like, when I speak of Europeans or mental Europeans, I am not allowing for false distinctions. I'm not saying that on the one hand there are the byproducts of a few thousand years of genocidal reactionary European intellectual development, which is bad. And on the other hand, there is some new revolutionary intellectual development, which is good. I'm referring here to the so-called theories of Marxism and anarchism and leftism in general. I don't believe these theories can be separated from the rest of the European intellectual tradition. It's really just the same old song. Do you agree with that?
I almost completely agree. I would have very little problems with that analysis.
I do remember, I'm not sure what part of the same essay or speech that he wrote, but he did also mention that what Marcus did was, what Marx did was he despiritualized basically the environment within, I guess, his ideas, the same way that European or Western ideology has dehumanized Native Americans.
Mm-hmm. I actually have that here.
Yeah, okay.
If you want me to read that.
Sure.
In terms of the despiritualization of the universe, the mental process works so that it has becomes virtuous to destroy the planet. Terms like progress and development are used as cover words here, the way victory and freedom are used to justify butchery in the dehumanization process. For example, a real estate speculator may refer to a developing parcel of ground by opening a gravel quarry. Development here means total permanent destruction with the earth itself removed. But European logic has gained a few tons of gravel, which more land can be developed through the construction of roadbeds. Ultimately, the whole universe is open in the European view to this sort of insanity. And it says they feel no sense of loss in this. And there's more about that. I know what you're talking about. There's a part where he talks about how, like, the uranium gets dumped into, like, indigenous land. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the military plays a big role in Native American land in very, very different ways. I actually kind of went into a whole, like, reading of this, and, like, you know, the same thing that happens in the Middle East, and a lot of people don't know this, is the same thing that happens here in our reservations. Like, you know, the bombs that they throw over there are first tested with our people, and a lot of people are dying of cancer and other things, of, like, you know, because of the radiation that's, you know, coming around.
So there's another interesting example also. In the Soviet Union under Joseph Stalin, there was this issue called the national question, because there was indigenous tribes in the mountains of Russia. And the idea was, should we respect their sovereignty and respect them as indigenous people, or do we need to remove them for the purpose of industrialization? And there were two opposing camps inside the Soviet Union at the time. And ultimately what won out was that they should remove these tribes for the purpose of industrialization. So that's an example there of how, yes, you know, at the heart of it, industrialization is a problem. And the ideologies are a platform that can go different ways and not necessarily colonialist, but they very well can be if practiced that way.
Yeah, like, in the sense that, like, if you read, like, a lot of Marxist theory, there's some theory about, like, about historical materialism, about how it's like springs from a fundamental underlying reality of human existence, that in order for human beings to survive and continue existence from generation to generation, it is necessary for them to produce and reproduce the material requirements of life. Marx extended this premise, this is like taken from Wikipedia, premise by asserting that the importance of the fact that in order to carry out production and exchange, people have to enter into definite social relations, most fundamentally production relations. And in that, in the speech, it's a speech that was like written down by Russell Means. And he says something, he talks about how, like, where is this thing? There was great, what the fuck is this? Well, there was something just about how, like, in the culture that he's from, that there, the gain and owner, being is a spiritual proposition, gaining is a material act. Traditionally, American Indians have always attempted to be the best people they could. Part of that spiritual process was and is to give away wealth, to discard wealth in order to not gain. So, and I know that it's not like with the indigenous groups, like it's not universal what's believed, but like, I don't know, it just, to me, sounds like it sounds like they fall back. Even in Marxism, it's supposed to be like each according to their need and da 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 da. But it just sounds like it falls back into this like production over people. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's what's always happened, yeah.
I think that something that gets in the way a lot is that a lot of people don't understand what indigenous, I guess, spirituality is, because there's a language barrier between it, and English will never be able to explain well what it is. And a lot of times we sound very like peaceful hippies, but we're not. But one of the things that I think John Trudell, I think that's his name. Did I mess up? I'm
is
sorry.
Is he the Canadian guy? You're not talking about like Trudeau.
Yeah, I think maybe.
Is he the Canadian guy?
Not the Canadian Prime Minister.
This is terrible. Okay, but he was part of the American Indian movement.
That's so fucked up that the Canadian guy has the same name as the. Okay.
No, well, anyway. But no, he did. Is it Trudeau? I want to get his last name right before.
Oh, this is so funny.
I'm sure you know.
I believe it is.
So we're very passionate. We're very passionate. We don't always.
I'm so sorry, y'all.
No.
Like, I really fucked up his last name.
No, I don't care.
But, yeah, someone should correct me on that. But, he basically said that, and I really liked what he said in one of his writings, because he spoke about how Europeans like identifying everything, and I never really saw that until, I guess, I started reading his work, where he was just like, we happen to just kind of lose ourselves as human beings, and we start identifying ourselves as what we are. For example, you know, we're like, I don't know, workers, we're like this, we're that. We're black, we're brown, and that's kind of what he called a Columbus mentality, because when Columbus came and he asked like the Native Americans, who are you guys, and they said, we're humans, and he said, you're Indians. So therefore, like, you know, I tell a lot of people when it comes to like, especially Native American people, I tell them this, because a lot of like people south of the border are trying to reclaim their native side now. Because, you know, with the whole idea of decolonizing and decolonization movement.
Yeah, that, like, you know, there's these are like
and
white
they're,
barriers.
And they're like, you know, what does it mean to be Native American? And a lot of times when people are, like, decolonizing, they get really into what, I guess, the internet has told them. And I tell them a lot of times, I'm like, you know, we weren't Native Americans and we were not indigenous people and we were not American Indians. And it's kind of hard because there's so many things that we are identified as. But in truly, like, our people always identified as human beings. That's kind of what we identified. And I feel like in the sense what Russell was trying to say is that when we're using Western ideology, we're identifying workers and giving them, like, you know, workers do deserve more rights, but not because they're workers, but because they're working the lands that they're, like, you know, working on. So, like, you know, it's more about, like, what are you doing for this environment that you deserve it, you know? It's not really more of, like, that's where the whole idea of, like, either way, it's more about materialism mm-hmm. if you're still putting, like, you know, the idea of, like, industry. Or
yeah, like, you have to be doing this mm-hmm. thing to have it.
Yeah.
But then also, like, but in terms of, like, I've heard you say this, like, those who work the land own it.
That's, yeah.
So in there's the that, but then it's also, like, do you think people just, like, deserve... the thing to survive just for surviving?
I feel like everybody has something to give. It doesn't really have to be like you working in the, you know, the actual field or the land.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But there's always something, for example, like, you know, we both belong to Hoods for Justice. And
Hoods for Justice.
A lot of our ideas are based on, like, you know, how, like, indigenous people are anarchist. And, like, one thing that me and, like, my sibling tend to, like, talk about a lot is how we are not new to, like, anarchism. We're just new to the word anarchism. For example, like, we were anarchists before we even knew what anarchism was. For example, like, they told me that them in the Philippines, they work, you know, with their families, and it's kind of the same way that Mexico, my family works, which is like we eat together, we like talk to each other on Sundays, we're all like in like behind our house in a firehouse. I don't know what it's called, a smokehouse. It's weird. I don't really know how to explain it, but yeah. And we're like, there's this table set up, and it's like you have to sit there because that's a requirement to get to know everybody there. And once that is done, we're like doing the labor around the house, or we're doing the labor that we have to do, not because we're getting paid for it or because we feel that it's our duty, but it's just a responsibility for us to like look out for everybody and make sure that everything is easy for everybody else. And if somebody's slacking, you're able to pick up where the other person is slacking too, you know, and help them out. So
and
I think
there's not like that shame that seems to exist so rampantly in our society.
I think a lot of times what we confuse is that some people, especially in these systems, feel forced to do things. And for us, it's not really forcing us ourselves to do things. Like, you know, people like to say that, you know, anarchists are lazy.
I think whenever people say anarchists are lazy, I just want to be like, no, actually, you're lazy because you haven't been able to, like, change the way your way of thinking.
And I'm like,
you're intellectually lazy.
The only difference is that you feel like you should force somebody to work, and we feel like it's our responsibility to do it because this is what we're supposed to be doing for other people.
And that's what I said, like, earlier in the show. I was talking a little bit about how, like, I think that we're trying to find like a real alternative. Like, there's not just communism, there's not just capitalism, and that we're really looking for an alternative as a society, but I'm not sure people are ready. Like, I see a lot of people in activist spaces just sit on their ass and not like really get up and try to do anything at all.
I see a lot of anarchists say they're anarchists and they're not really pulling anarchist strings.
Yeah, they're not really trying to build anything outside of anything or trying to pick up any, but yeah, that's another thing that I was gonna ask you. I said, do you feel like a lot of other groups use Marxist ideas, but it's not Marx because it predates it, because he gets all the credit because we live in a Eurocentric society?
Yeah, that, I think that's a valid point, because a lot of these things that, like Abby was saying, that we call socialism or we call anarchism existed before, just didn't have a name. Europeans get credit for naming it and for sort of like saying like our society should adapt to this. It doesn't mean that they created it. It was around before. They just gave it a particular name.
Mm-hmm.
So like a lot of Marxist groups, there's also a difference between base Marxism and Marxism-Leninism.
Then that gets all complicated because communism's been developed way beyond Marx.
Right.
But I actually would like to read what the basics of Marxism are for people who are listening who don't know, because it's easy for us to forget that other people don't know what this is. So Marxism methodology originally used a method of economic and socio-political inquiry known as historical materialism to analyze and critique the development of capitalism and the role of class struggle in systemic economic change. And a lot of people who don't like Marxism really like his critique of capitalism, but they don't like his ideas around it. According to Marxist perspective, class conflict within capitalism arises due to intensifying contradictions between the highly productive, mechanized, and socialized production performed by the proletariat and the private ownership and appropriation of the surplus product profit by a small minority of the population who are private owners called the bourgeoisie. As the contradiction becomes apparent to the proletariat through the alienation of labor, social unrest between the two antagonistic classes will intensify until it culminates in social revolution. The eventual long-term outcome of this revolution will be the establishment of socialism, a socio-economic system based on social ownership of the means of production, distribution based on one's contribution, and production organized directly for use. As the production forces and technology continue to advance, Marx hypothesized that socialism would eventually give way to communist stage of social development, which would be a classless, stateless, humane society erected on common ownership and principle, from each according to his ability, to each according to his needs. So that's and I'm actually like really down with that, and that's where the last part, and that's where to me it sounds like it's almost like synonymous with anarchism, which mm-hmm. is why I think it's like so funny when people are like, I'm a Marxist, I'm an anarchist, I'm a blah, 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 blah. And that's where it just gets like so fucking academic, and that's why I get really irritated.
The difference is that like Marx advocated a transitional state into communism or anarchism.
Sounds like Hillary Clinton with that incremental change bullshit.
Incremental change, yeah.
I actually had a conversation with a socialist professor when I went to Split Rock Camp. Oh, yeah, sorry. I actually had, like, a conversation with a socialist professor. And he wasn't a very big fan of anarchism. And he actually thought I was a socialist when he first met me.
Because he thought you were so smart.
And he was just like, what are you? And I was like, I'm an indigenous anarchist. And he just looked at me. He's like, anarchism, And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, and then we started talking about how the whole idea of Russell Means and all of this. And I was like, you know, he's like, you're a very open-minded anarchist. And I'm like, well, I mean, I kind of think that anarchism doesn't, it's not really an ideology. Like, for example, I feel like, and after reading Russell Means, like, I don't agree with everything Russell Means said. Sorry to anybody who is a Russell Means fan. But
I just article made me think in a way I hadn't.
I feel like there's certain points that he made that are correct. But I feel like we struggle a lot to be like the past, and we don't struggle to see what can work for the future. So, for example, I think that if we take socialism and we take communism, but we don't take everything it has offered, because obviously it has not completely worked, because obviously our world's still not perfect.
It's the Soviet Union and all that shit, you know, yeah. That shit was a mess.
But, like, if we take, like, certain points that we find that can work, and we also agree that we are still living on indigenous land, and we can, like, you know, really, like, support and respect, you know, indigenous and black people and their ideas, and we can combine all of these things, I feel like it's just a matter of us working together and trying to make ends meet, which in a form is anarchism, mm-hmm. because you're not really saying, you know, this is socialism, this is communism, and this is anarchism. Now we're just making our own system out of everything we know, mm-hmm. which is basically what anarchism is.
Exactly. Yeah, because even a lot of anarchists, they get very stuck on, like, there. A lot of Western anarchists are obsessed with the Spanish Revolution.
Oh my God, I thought they want to go, like, Spanish Revolution LARPing.
It's true. And they don't realize, like, the Spanish Revolution, yeah, it was great, but there was also problematic elements in there. There was a problem with misogyny, which is why there was
a
split off.
There's always a fucking problem with misogyny.
Yeah, there was a split off group, the Free Women. And, like, that was based on material conditions in Spain in that culture at that time.
I'll let you finish, and then I'll go.
So, like, anarcho-syndicalism, which is what I think Russell Means was referring to when he says anarchism.
What is anarcho-syndicalism for people who don't know what that means? Because this is going to become very, I mean, I can
academic-ish, yeah.
I can explain it if you don't.
I mean, anarcho-syndicalism is sort of like a method to achieve anarcho-communism. So it's based on replacing the state with unions.
We need to fucking, like, make, like, minute and a half, definitions for these words, and just have, like, a chang, dun, 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 and, like, explains it and goes back. You were talking about the Spanish Revolution.
Do I like certain elements of that? Yes. But do I feel like that is the best and most viable strategy for today? No, because we live in different culture. We live in different material conditions. So like Abby was saying, there's too much focus on staying stuck in the past and not creating something new. Mm-hmm. And you can take any of these ideologies that may be great and may have excellent points, but if you don't acknowledge the decolonization aspect, you're still going to end up with something that reverts back to the same system.
I think we've stereotyped anarchism a lot, and a lot of people just believe that anarchism is
a bunch of punk kids.
Yes.
Yeah. And I love a bunch of punk kids. I do, but I love them, but sometimes it's just a bunch of bratty little white boys. You know, you know my white boy anarchist characters. I get why I have a white boy anarchist character. He believes that Emma Goldman's favorite video game would be Dance Dance Revolution. But she had this quote that was like, "It's not my revolution if there's no dancing, it's not my revolution," or something like that. But I get why people think that way. But it's actually like infuriating. Like I've gotten in like arguments at bars with people when I'm like wasted. They're like, anarchism just means there's no rules. I'm like, that is not what it mean at all. I'm like, anarchists just want to fucking organize differently than you think we should. And I'm like, we just want to do it in a way it hasn't been done, man. And like, I can show you examples of how it works. And they're like, oh yeah, well, that's a small level.
Are you drunk by the time you say this?
Totally. That's my drink. But I still don't sound that dumb, right?
No. I've seen you argue before.
You've seen me argue drunk? Oh, man. We were all in this bar once, and my friend came in, who is kind of my friend. And they were like, they got in this argument with like one of the smart, they got in an argument with Tommy.
Okay.
And Tommy, you know, has like an answer for everything. And they're just like, that doesn't make sense. Who would own it? And they were like, us. And they're like, but that, like, I thought they were going to, like, pop a vein. It was, like, really intense.
To be honest, I feel like a lot of times the problem and the big problem is that people talk about making new systems, but they're really afraid of leaving this one.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that does not, you know, a lot of people think
that. I probably am, sort of. I don't like to think I am, but.
No, I mean, I think everybody is. I think I am. I think everybody really has a fear of letting go of things. And the reality of it, some of us have a more fear than others, but the reality of it is until we basically let go of a lot of our ideas that aren't even politics, just regular society in itself, for example, like the gender roles, the idea of environmental and how the environment should be treated, even like time itself and how we treat time, it's like, you know, it's all something that we should be changing because, you know, we can change our system over and over to different, like, you know, names. But as long as we're not changing the way we think and the way we're moving and, you know, the Western ideology that, you know, has kind of occupied here, we're not really changing much.
Yeah, I hear that. And I think that, like, a lot of it comes down to this very, the fact that talking about Marxism and all socialism, all this, it is about the means of production in terms of, like, how we're going to get the food and stuff people need. But it does come, it just becomes about economics and money. And like, that's when you get into the stuff about like it being not spiritual mm-hmm. or just straight up, whatever you want to call it, just really disrespectful to the environment and the earth and other people's environments and prioritizing certain kinds of people over other people. And it's just like, if you're not even going to respect the basics of the earth, it's almost not even worth having the discussion.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're just not going to respect the earth, it is just going to end up being the same thing, however you're going to distribute it.
Yeah, which is how you get into the argument of, like, are Marxist-Leninist regimes state capitalist?
Because what the fuck is this Marxist? That's the one I don't know what the fuck that
Marxist,
is. That's some,
Marxism-Leninism
like,
is a, the Soviet Union.
Those are some last names. Yes.
Yeah, that's the last names of any of, like, these
Christian
famous
is great
Marxist
at explaining this.
No, I know who Lenin is, but, like, the Marxist-Leninist, I hear people say this stuff, and I'm just like, oh, my God, like, okay, I'm going to go, like...
Well, it's Marxism with the belief that you have to have a vanguard party that leads the revolution because the workers don't know how to do it themselves, essentially.
Yeah, that's, like, I'm super not down
with
that.
Goes back to why academia is a problem. To be honest, it does not let people's experiences, like, it literally silences people's experiences.
Yeah.
Like, somebody telling me that you know about indigenous liberation without being an indigenous person because you studied for 6 years does not mean you're qualified to tell me 23 years of my life.
It's pretty insulting.
Yeah, it actually is.
Yeah, it's really insulting. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with studying these things. I think that you should study these things. Like, I mean, not should, but like if you're interested in revolution, yes, read communist texts. Yes, read socialist texts. Read anarchist texts. Blah blah blah. Study fucking like tons of stuff about you know. Different movements that have happened. I'm like, I study the suffragettes movement, and that's one of my major arguments that I use when people say, why can't it be all lives matter? I'm like, because when it's all women's lives matter, they push black women to the back.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So I use that example to like back up why certain...
Kind of like feminism does.
Kind of like feminism. I mean, exactly. No, that's straight up feminism. That's why you have to... No, but see, but then you don't... So that's why I make the distinction off of it being like, no, that sounds like very white feminism, or that
mm-hmm.
sounds like very like...
Liberal feminism,
or statist feminism.
Well,
or
I have yet to see the feminism movement actually include indigenous women. I've only seen them tokenize indigenous women, but I've never seen them truly include indigenous women.
Yeah, but I want to move into that a little later, but we're about to get something really good, though. We could talk about that now. Let's just go into this. I was going to play we're going to play this little sketch right now that I did with my friend Sage, who's actually an Aries. Sage the Sagittarius. This is a really funny clip called, it's weird as fuck. It's called Marxist Astrology. It's a sketch, so I thought, you know, I've been playing it every episode at about 3:30. You're listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. Here we go.
And welcome to Marxist Astrologist. So we were just talking about the current relationship between Aries and Gemini. Sagittarius, can you start? That's her name, Sage, Sagittarius.
I'm an Aries, not a Sagittarius, but my name is Sagittarius.
Oh yeah, but like,
but yeah, there's like a class, some class struggle going on between the Aries and the Geminis. Like the Aries are just like totally like profiting off of like the demonization of the Geminis, and like I myself have a complicated relationship with that. Like, you know, with like my like coming into like my consciousness of like my astrological identity. It's like, you know, I'm like an Aries sun, but like my moon is Gemini.
Yeah, man, so that means like you're having a really hard time, because like I feel like Aries are really like in this like anarchist mode right now, and Geminis seem to be like not sure if they want to be socialists or Aries. So like, do you feel like you have to bridge the gap between those already bridging the gap?
I totally believe in astrological unity. You know, we can't we can't defeat our oppressor, who I won't name, because I know who it is.
Yeah, I know who our oppressor. I know who our oppressor is too. Like, but just to be
names are powerful.
Names are powerful. They're too powerful. Like,
it which will not be named.
Yeah, I don't want to awaken their stars.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to awaken their star particles. You know, but I really feel like, you know, we have to unite all of the astrological signs, like the astrological 12, and like, see, that's the thing. Like, I feel like 12 is such a holy number.
It is. It is. And it's just like, you know, as an Aries, but also part Gemini, I have to look at, like, in my own Aries community, I have to call out anti-Geminism.
Yeah, I hear that. That's like, it's like this thing where, like, a lot of people are getting called liberals that are, like, not actually liberals. And I feel like that's, like, synonymous with Gemini.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost...
Like, Gemini's a per se.
It's a connected struggle.
It is. But like, I feel like that's a really good
like
band
it's not
name.
Just international anymore. It's like galactic.
It's galactic, yeah. But like, well, how do you feel about like that? Like the Gemini Hearsay or Hearsay Gemini is like a band name.
It's good.
God, holy shit! I just laughed like so. Okay, so hello everybody. I've been posting questions. Welcome to, you're on listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. You were just listening to Marxist Astrology, the sketch that I'd done with Sage Sagittarius. That was our episode, Aries and Gemini. But I post these Twitter statuses and these Facebook statuses throughout my episode. And one of them I wrote is, are you too stuck in the past with activism? And somebody said, ban infant circumcision. And I completely agree with them. And this is one of those things where it's like, you can be anti-male circumcision and not hate feminism and not hate women. That is really hard for some of these dudes to do. Mm-hmm. It's like, you can be anti-Zionist and not be anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
You like it's like God, these people are fucking. Oh, and here we go, we got an answer to how do we decolonize. I asked that. Roman Reimer, who was on the show 2 weeks ago, said, give back land. Somebody said, you should watch The Thinning. It's pretty fucked up. And someone said, it's tough because a lot of colonizing is be done by corporations in foreign countries, such as Myanmar. What are you talking about, though? What am I talking about?
That goes into anti-imperialism. That's
anti-imperialism. And you could be anti-imperialism without being pro-dictator.
Exactly.
There's a lot of these things. You know what I mean? You can be da-da-da-da. You can be really, really radical without being a fucking asshole. You can be really, really radical without also being a dehumanizing shithead. You can be really, like, a great activist without becoming Donald Trump. All right. sorry, it's just fucking infuriating. I hate everybody. Okay, so, I love you all, I'm sorry.
But we're still for the people.
Yeah, for the people, but I hate you. Man, fucking people. So we were talking, I want to get into the feminist stuff eventually, because you've talked to me about that, and it's super fucking interesting. But I want to talk about the academic thing a little bit more. Just so, it's a totally, people who are listening to this, who are like, but I've read so much about anarchism and communism, I know so much, you think that's worthless? No, I don't think that's worthless. Like, I think that's, like, completely valid, and you should be studying these ideas, and da-da-da. But what I'm saying is, like, a lot of people want to talk to me theoretically about the revolution and what will happen, and da-da-da-da-da. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, where are you even getting this from?
It's like a little culty.
Yeah, like, you know how many fucking Trotskyists I get matched to on Tinder?
The world revolution.
On Tinder, I have something written like,
I just got a Tinder.
You just got a Tinder? On my Tinder, I say that we will have nothing to talk about unless you're on the far left. Or I have no interest. So I get matched to all these, like 20-year-old Trotskyites. It's really funny.
where the revolution will happen all at once.
I've seen like
world.
10 cops on Tinder. I'm still wondering why I have this app.
Oh my god, wait. Let's all fucking swipe right on cops and like just go. No, I don't even know. But it'd be really funny if we all like.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, right. I'm not doing it. Either. I don't know why I thought that'd be funny. It actually wouldn't be funny. It wouldn't be funny at all. Anyway, let's not get into the Tinder conversation. But yeah, it's it does seem like there's a lot of focus on like material, and it's like this like still in the concept of efficiency, like how do we create the most? And like yes, we need to create a lot, but there's a way to have that balance. You know, I don't even know what I'm talking about there. I sound like a crackhead.
I think one of the problems is also there is nothing wrong with academia, and I truly empower Black and Brown people who decide to get into the academic fields of learning, because it's like you have a door open for you at that time, because you know sometimes they don't really validate people with just experience, but because you know politics is very dirty, but it's very important that you do learn what you should know. But one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of people, especially this happens a lot with indigenous communities, and I tend to say this a lot, you know, if I ever go to university or I ever go to anywhere. And this, I guess this came to me because I actually met somebody who did this. I'm gonna keep this nameless, but I went to an event and this woman started talking about how she had helped indigenous people and how she had bought something for indigenous people to, I guess, do better. And in my mind, I was like, but were you asked? And she didn't really say, you know, she was asked. And I'm like, okay, do you feel like you intruded? Which she couldn't answer either. And I was like, the problem is a lot of people come to our communities and they tell us, this is how you should be doing so that, you know, you could be fighting, you know, your liberation. And I feel a lot of times a person with academic experience should probably be organizing to, I guess, fight towards the oppressor and not come into communities with experience telling them what they should be knowing about their experience.
Yeah, that's like very patriarchal in a way. It's not necessarily patriarchal.
It's colonialist.
That's imperialism.
Because like we've been fighting for 500 years. Like we're still here because we're obviously somehow surviving. Mm-hmm. So for you to tell me that you have a 6-year experience on knowing how to fight or, you know, and telling us what to do, I'm like, great, you have this, and it's great that you have it, but it'd be better if you use it to be on our side than to tell us what to do on our side, you know?
Mm-hmm. I also think, like, the academia and the ideological stuff is useful, but only if you sort of use it within reality. So, like, yeah, study and learn about different things, but adapt it to reality. Think about your life experience and listen to others, because you're not going to have all the answers on your own experience. You need to listen to other people's, other communities' experience. The ideological stuff is useful because it can give you an analysis of what the problems may be or what to fight against. Because you may know, like, that you have to fight, but then it becomes like, so what's the problem? What's the enemy? And sometimes without an analysis of economics or the state, that's how you end up with, like, the weird conspiracy theories of, like, oh, it's the reptiles, it's the Illuminati.
It's the reptile globalists.
It's the reptilians, guys. Reptilians.
It's the globalists, you know.
Don't blame...
Reptilians.
Don't blame the snakes.
So, yeah, you don't... I mean, that stuff is also controlled opposition.
The snake gave Eve the apple, which gave her first orgasm, and then she realized she didn't need Adam anymore.
I have never heard that one.
I made that up.
Oh, okay. I'll
no, she had her first orgasm, and she realized she didn't need him, but she didn't need men to come. And then everything got fucked up because everybody was like, oh no, women realized they didn't need the cock.
Well, read about Lilith. The story of Lilith is very interesting.
I'm the reincarnation of Lilith, man. I'm your reptilian snake.
But yeah, a lot of those conspiracy theories are controlled opposition and revert back to like bigotry or anti-Semitism and such. So you really don't want to have much engagement with that.
You have to realize what you're taking in.
Right.
So,
but then you need to think about reality and life experience.
Yeah, of course you do. So this random dude, Jim Bugatti, responded to my thing that said, how can I fuck your Vanguard party? That's what I asked on Twitter. Like, it meant to how can I fuck it up, but he responded with, become a leader of the Vanguard party and lead it where you want it to go. And I said, but why would I want a coercive party or something like that? What did I say? Leading it. I said, why would I want a coercive Vanguard party? So I don't know how that drama is going to play out there. But so when I said, do you forget colonialism when you do activism? And somebody said, for example, too many activists forget to condemn the colonialization and imperialism of the Russian Federation and the Northern Caucasus or Ukraine because they are too focused on fighting the capitalism of the West. And in the process, they become apologists for fascist regimes such as the Assad regime or Putin's regime because they perceive them as the enemies of the neoliberal West, so they must be the good guys. That's exactly what I was talking about. Like, you can be anti-imperialism without being pro-Assad. But I'm sorry if I But I was very sorry if I was interrupting you, Christian.
Oh, no, I was pretty much done anyway. I was going to give it to Abby.
Oh, okay. Well, Abby, why don't you talked to me a lot about, not a lot, but a little bit about, like, feminism with Indigenous women. You want to tell me a little about that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of get turned off by my activism when I say I'm not a feminist, and they're just like, so you're anti-women, and I'm like, no, that's definitely not what it meant. Kind of goes back to the whole word of, like, you know, anarchism and how a lot of people have been anarchists before even knowing what the word anarchism is. So, like, you know, Indigenous women have always had the power or had, you know, a very high place in communities before colonization. So to us, it's still part of the decolonization movement to go back to that. I do feel like the feminist movement does not include Indigenous women. And a lot of times they tokenize Indigenous women. And this does not go to say that feminists who are Indigenous or Indigenous women who consider themselves feminists are not doing great work, because they are. And I support any woman or any Indigenous woman who considers themselves feminist. But I feel personally, like, a lot of times, and I explain it to this, or I use the metaphor of, they let us talk about the wolf. They let us cry wolf, but they don't let us kill the wolf. In other words, we kind of get in the way when it comes to feminism. For example, if we were to talk about Indigenous feminism, we'd have to accept that industrial stuff does not work for us. Why? Because 2 in every 3 girls who are Indigenous and under the age of 12 get raped. And this is because there is a lot of man camps when it comes to industrial, you know, factories and all this, like, oil things. Because it's a whole Pocahontas story again. It's like men coming from different places, seeing that the reservation is not, or the police in the reservation are not going to care. You know, they murdered the missing and murdered Indigenous women, go missing because nobody really cares. And a lot of, you know...
So I never heard that before, and that's a very feminist issue that should be... And it's kind of fucked up that even needs to be an issue because of what you said to me before about Indigenous women previously not having the same problems as colonialist society.
It's the same thing that the U.S. military does in the Philippines and the Middle East.
And it's really worldwide. For example, when people talk about, like, you know, because a lot of, like, the Indigenous, I guess, movement focuses not only on talking about Indigenous people in the U.S. It's really, like, you know, before colonization, which goes back to decolonizing, there was no such thing as borders. And what is now New York and what is now the United States and Mexico and Canada was known as Turtle Islands. So, you know, collecting everybody's story from every country, you know, there is a big femicide problem when it comes to Indigenous women. And there's so many cases, like in Mexico, in my state, I come from a state that is very known for, like, human trafficking of women. And it is extremely silent. So, like, you know, in Canada, the missing and murdered Indigenous women, the No Idol, the movement, they focus on that too. And the U.S. also has a high rate of Indigenous. So if we put all the numbers together, it's a problem that goes beyond just, like, you know, feminism. It goes into, like, capitalism. It goes into, like, everything, which goes back to, like, why, you know, Western ideology does not work for us. And I feel like a lot of times, I feel like a lot of times feminism is still rooted in a system that does not work for Indigenous women at all.
Also, look at the case with, like, all the missing Black girls in D.C.
That too.
almost nobody talked about that, and so many prominent so-called feminists were not talking about it. Like, you know, a few, like, far-left Marxist, anarchist feminists, etc., were talking about it, but most of, like, the mainstream feminist movement was not mentioning this at all. Just like they never mentioned women killed in other countries by imperialism. So,
yeah, exactly. Like, that's exactly like what I was saying before about the suffragette,
movement
ignored black women, and the fucking women's march excluded sex workers,
yeah.
And like felt very, and also people were fucking chanting USA, and I started chanting open borders, and nobody chanted with me.
And they didn't really, I think that in New York they didn't really include a trans woman either, right?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't include trans women? I didn't even know that.
Well, they also complained, like the organizers of the women's march complained that the black women were being divisive by talking about racism. That was a big problem.
So that's something I want to ask you all. How do you feel about that? So there's this whole thing in like a lot of Marxist ideology or like a lot of Marxist groups where they're not saying that like racism and stuff isn't a problem under the system, because it totally is. But they talk about how in order for us to overthrow the system, we have to put aside racism because it's only a thing within the context of the system. How do you feel about these people who are like class war?
I've never really heard that from Marxist-Leninist groups. Like
you never heard that those people, not the people who are like, stop talking about identity politics.
Oh, you
about
mean like
class
the class reductionists?
Yeah, let's talk about class.
Oh, you find those of Marxists, you find them in anarchists. Actually, there's a lot of anarchists.
What do you think about
like
those
that.
People? What do you think of that?
They have an outdated and Eurocentric analysis, because that comes from reading about, like, again, Spain, Russia, Ukraine.
Spanish Civil War LARPing!
Right. And they think, like, oh, it was only one race, so it was only class. One thing that they forget is that in the context of Russia, there were oppressed ethnic groups in Russia that were not considered, you know, quote-unquote Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And they forget that in this society, in American society, we live in a multicultural society. It's not the same as, like, it's not really the same as, like, Greece or France and a lot of these countries that they look to.
Yeah, I mean,
so
obviously.
Race affects your class standing.
It does, but I'm saying if we're trying to take down class,
yeah.
Do you think that, like, race would become irrelevant if we did take down class? So I'm saying.
Well, it ultimately comes down to class, but race, gender, sexuality, etc. influences your class, so you can't really ignore those issues when discussing class.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the oppressed people and the poor people from every social group need to come together and overthrow the system, but that's not going to happen if we don't call out the racism. Because
yeah,
when you sweep that under the rug, then you will get another white-centered movement.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah, it just recreates a sort of under-the-table white supremacy.
Yeah, I agree.
And it creates white saviorism mentality.
It's kind of like when Donald Trump said that he was going to build the wall, and because Mexicans were taking jobs. And a lot of people of color hopped onto this train and were like, yeah, you know, we lost our jobs because of Mexicans. And it's like, no, you didn't. Like, you know.
You lost your job because of capital.
Because of NAFTA.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the reason why I'm even asking about this is because, like, you know, in my opinion, like, in order to take down classism, we need to start at, like, the bottom.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We need to work up from the bottom. But what it is it's like, I do see what people are saying in terms of them saying is are we continuing to divide by race in a way where we will not be able to come together to overthrow classism. But then that's also one of those things where it becomes very victim blaming, because it's like, oh, you're making it harder for rich white people to participate. So it sounds stupid.
Yeah, well, we should always bash the rich no matter what.
We should bash the rich because they're far too comfortable. They're far, far, far too comfortable, which is why they're not participating.
Yeah. There's a problem with class analysis with no understanding of identity, and there's a big problem also with identity politics with no class analysis. Because identity politics without any class analysis is how you get, like, black capitalism, for example. You know, you get the idea that, like, the way to get rid of racism is to just assimilate into the same system and become rich.
Well, that's something where I feel like a lot of people are, like, super afraid
to talk
that, like,
yeah.
You know, that women or people of color would just be better at capitalism than white men. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I feel like there's this, like, air of that a little bit. Like, what if they're better at doing it than we were? And the white men start freaking out.
A lot of class reductionists, I've never really seen a class reductionist of color. So, and they're usually men. And I think a lot of what it comes down to is that they're afraid of the white privilege thing.
Yeah, this is Tom coming in to do Brooklyn Bandstand next, but keep talking.
Yeah, they're afraid of the white privilege thing because they feel that if you mention white privilege, they're being personally attacked. They take it personal rather than taking it as an analysis of a system.
Well, I've also met class reductionists who don't actually feel that way, you know what I mean? They're just worried that, like, if we keep talking, because what it is, it's like the classism that connects with race only exists within the system, mm-hmm. correct? Like, it's not inherent that, like, you know what I mean? It's not inherent that anybody, like, is... I mean, but it's also social, too. So that's the thing. Like, mm-hmm. even if you change the class part, racism would still exist.
If you change the economics, you could still have a bad society.
Yeah, exactly.
You could have a social society with racist people running it. Like, it's just economics.
But who would be running it, though, if it was, like, a classless society?
Well, socialism doesn't always imply classlessness. I mean, some of my Marxist-Leninist friends would disagree, but...
Oh, do you mean doesn't always imply leaderlessness?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want that leaderlessness.
And that's a whole nother discussion.
Mm-hmm. No, but there was this thing. I listened to this show, this podcast called Chapo Trap House. And they're like, the way it was described by, like, libertarian people critiquing it were like a Bernie Bros circle jerk. And I thought that was pretty hilarious. But there was a guy on there who was, like, talking about history in the civil rights movement where there was, like, a woman who organized more around class with poor white people, and she got more done than people who weren't doing it that way. So I'm wondering is, like, do you think that, like, poor white people should be, movements be trying to get poor white people to work with them? Because it's like poor white people, like, just don't, they don't get that they have a lot of the same struggles class-wise.
Well, that's what Redneck Revolt was trying to do. And there's
a group called Redneck Revolt.
Yeah. And they're trying to
do
that.
So interesting.
The problem is a lot of the poor white people in this country have been indoctrinated into, like, a right-wing ideology.
Wait, Abby, what do you think of that? What do you think of that?
Redneck Revolt.
Sorry, we were almost done.
That's racist. I don't know.
No, they're trying to organize, like, the Young Patriots organization that were allies with the Black Panthers.
Okay. Yeah, okay, cool. So... we have, like, a few more minutes left, and you're listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. And if you like what you're listening to, if you like Radio Free Brooklyn, you can donate to us at patreon.com/Radio Free Brooklyn. Coming up next is going to be Brooklyn Bandstand with Tom Tenney. You're going to be listening to music that is, a lot of it's probably going to be playing tonight, and you can go see those shows. And I'm here with Christian and Abby, anti-colonial activists. You've been listening to an episode titled Our Far Left Ideologies, such as Marxism and anarchism, Eurocentric. Do you guys have any last comments for that before we sign off?
I would just pretty much say again that ideology in academia is not everything. It's how it intersects with reality and experience. So it can be colonialist. It's not necessarily if you use the platform in a different way. And you discard what may be some problematic elements from the past.
I honestly think people should probably do a lot more research from indigenous people themselves and what they have said. For example, Russell Means' essays or speech was a great example. There's a lot of indigenous people out there who have a lot of great things to say but are not often heard. And I feel like, you know, there's a certain responsibility that you have as a person living on indigenous land to, you know, follow up on, like, you know, what indigenous people also say. So that's really all I have to say.
All right. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. I'm on here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. And if you ever want to be on the show, you can email me at tooke@radiofreebrooklyn.org. We got about 5 more minutes left. And there's an event that's going to be going on. It's called The Start treatment and recovery center. It's going to be from June 16th to June 17th. So I'm going to read you the little copy here. At START, they believe that the best way to treat people is the right way to treat people. They have committed themselves to being the organization that will support transformation for better lives with clinics and adolescent care. Their mission is to educate the community and leverage research for the betterment of those they serve. START is hiring for talented candidates such as nurse positions, RNs, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, counselors, clinic directors, and great internship experiences and more at the Treatment and Recovery Center's fair on Friday, June 16th from 3:30 to 7 p.m. and Saturday, June 17th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at 937 Fulton Street in Brooklyn. Come enjoy light refreshments and meet our hiring managers dressed to impress and bring a copy of your resume and all licenses, credentials you may have. Please go to startny.org to learn more. So, as usual, to the question, are far left ideas such as anarchism and Marxism, are they Eurocentric? The answer to this question is it's not so clear. It's never so clear. There are no yes and no questions. Yes, there are, but most of them aren't yes or no questions. And fuck the two-party system. Fuck your good and evil. Fuck your devil and God. Fuck your everything and nothing. Fuck your creation destruction. Wow, I sound like an 18-year-old on acid right now. 18-year-olds on acid. What's up, Abby?
Fuck the police.
Fuck the police.
And fuck capitalism and authority.
Yeah. FTP. There's a show on Radio Free Brooklyn, actually, that's called FTP Podcast, or Radio, FTP Radio, FTP Radio, and when we were reading their submission, it apparently it means for the people, and I was like, yeah, you know, I'm just, like, really confused about why they're called the FTP show when they mentioned nothing about fuck the police in their thing, and everybody in the meeting was like, it stands for the people, and I was like, oh. Yeah, I like things to stand for what I want them to stand for. But their show's pretty good. It's a good show. I'm sure they talk about fucking the police, but not sexually. This is the part of the show where we get into a little bit of comic relief. And this pretty music, this by Williams.
Oh,
he
left out fuck white supremacy.
Yeah, so fuck white supremacy, but fuck it all.
That's an important one.
Fuck it all.
All of it.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do is like when somebody's being an asshole, I'll be like, hey, go fuck yourself. Hope you don't come ever again in your life. So is there any cool things going on that we should talk about before we end off here? Well, we're ending off.
No Justice, No Pride on June 25th.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, say it real quick, what is that?
No Justice, No Pride, June 25th. We're going to be having an event at the Pride Festival. Pride Parade.
Yeah. Fuck corporate pride.
Exactly.
Fuck TD Bank gay pride
you
flags.
Can get more info on Facebook.
It's like one of the wackest things ever. Can you believe there's like fucking like TD Banks flags? are you shitting on my dick?
Wait, there's TD Bank flags.
Oh my god, all of them have their little gay pride flags. I mean, I'm glad they're like pro gay and stuff and they're not trying to fuck with us,
from
but
like
it's
an,
like.
An assimilation.
It's assimilation. Stop trying to assimilate me. Whoa, there's a phone call. Somebody's calling us. Somebody's calling into the revolution right now. That's so funny to me. I want to tell people, call into what would save the world, and you're calling into the revolution. Dial into the revolution. Oh, the line is busy. Figured it would be. That's so fucked up. Oh my god. Slacktivist.
Activists are never on time.
Yeah, you're right. Cause fuck your like
your time.
Your time doesn't matter to me. Your time.